Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Antonio Guerrero Appeals in 11th Court for May 7th conference call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we will have the question and answer session. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Michael Smith. Mr. Smith, you may
begin. Hello. My name is Michael Smith. I'm a lawyer in New York City.
Yeah, on the Brown phone.
I'm a leader of the New York City chapter of the Lawyers Guild, the National Lawyers Guild. We're an organization of 5,000 lawyers in the major cities around the country, and we have chapters in 40 law schools around the country. Our organization has supported the Cuban Five on the basis that they could not and did not receive a fair trial in Miami. I'm going to be hosting this press conference. I'd like to first introduce Leonard Weinstein and then introduce Gloria LaRiva. Mr. Weinstein is the attorney here in New York City. He represents Antonio Guerrero, one of the Cuban Five. He's just filed an appeal with the 11th Circuit, and I'd like to turn this over to Mr. Weinglass. Len, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Michael. The correct name is Weinglass.
Did I say Weinstein? I'm sorry. That was my pediatrician.
The appeal was filed 11th Circuit in Atlanta, Georgia, today in a 14,000-word brief, approximately 65 pages in length, which claimed that the trial has to be reversed and a new trial ordered due to errors that occurred in the trial. Those errors are four in number. First, the failure of the court to change the venue out of Miami was an abuse of the court's discretion and a violation of the Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights of the defendants. Secondly, the evidence that was presented was insufficient to prove a conspiracy to commit espionage. Third, the court committed errors in the sentencing of Antonio Guerrero. And fourth, the failure of the court to instruct the jury on the defense of necessity was also a violation of the obligation of the court to instruct the jury on matters which were brought before it. So those four grounds are the basis of Mr. Guerrero's appeal. And those four grounds, at least the first ground and the last ground, do impact the appeal of all the others. The others have already filed their briefs on April, I believe, 7th. Mr. Guerrero was given a 30-day extension due to the fact that he was put into solitary confinement and removed from his legal papers and denied correspondence with his attorney. That led the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals to grant Mr. Guerrero an additional 30 days to May 7th. And it was on May 7th today that we filed his brief. I just want to briefly tell you a little bit about each of the four grounds. On the failure to change venue, and this is a major issue in the case, the court should not have allowed the case to go to trial in Miami. The defense sought a change of venue to Fort Lauderdale, which is just 30 miles north of the Miami courthouse and situated within the same judicial district. Ordinarily, transfers within the district are granted if there could be any showing of bias within the original district. And I don't think I'm telling you anything new or unique when I say that Miami was an inappropriate district for this trial. This trial of five admitted agents of the government of Cuba who came to the United States to monitor the activities of the mercenary groups that exist in southern Florida and that have been attacking Cuba over the previous 40 years. Miami, as you know, has more than 500,000 people who are originally from Cuba or related to people originally from Cuba. There is no other venue in the United States with that large a gathering of people from Cuba. And that population is not an immigrant population. The Cubans who are in the United States are exiles, not immigrants. By and large, they are people who are waiting to return home as soon as the Castro government is removed. And so you have a large number of people, over 600,000, who have a grievance with the government of Cuba, and of course would be biased against agents from that government. Secondly, you have a history of 40 years of bombast and propaganda against the government of Cuba in the Miami district. You have editorial comment in the largest newspaper, the Miami Herald, which pretty much called for a conviction of at least one who was charged with a conspiracy to commit murder as a way of vindicating the pain of the families. And interestingly enough, the Miami Herald also commented in a lead editorial that this trial could be a first step in removing the Castro government. Beyond that, a community survey was done of Miami, which indicated that nearly 70% of the people surveyed had a fixed opinion, and a shocking 90% of that number said they wouldn't change their view of these defendants in Cuba, irrespective of the evidence. So venue is a key issue in the appeal, and it's addressed in the briefs today. I just want to briefly talk about the other arguments that were made, the three. We argued that there was insufficient evidence to prove a conspiracy to commit espionage. In this case, the government acknowledged at the outset there was no classified information. Their expert witness, a General Clapper, C-L-A-P-P-E-R, formerly the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, acknowledged after looking at all of the reports back to Cuba that there was no national defense information that was sent by this group to the Cuban government. Also, in addition to that, the reports that were sent were reports dealing with the activities of the mercenary groups and having nothing to do with the government of the United States. There were some reports on the operational situation at a training base located at Key West. Reports contained publicly available information and therefore could not form the basis for an espionage prosecution. Third, the error on sentencing, which is addressed in the briefs, is clear because the trial court committed errors in sentencing Antonio Guerrero. Antonio Guerrero was sentenced to life in prison. And here you have a case with no classified information, no national defense information, and Mr. Guerrero was given the same life sentence that Aldrich Ames and Robert Hansen received for providing hundreds, if not thousands, of top secret documents to the Soviet Union. So there is no basis for Mr. Guerrero, even if he were guilty, to receive a sentence of life in prison. Lastly, the brief addresses the issue of necessity. The defense called 31 witnesses in this trial. The trial lasted 7 months. Those witnesses laid out a history of 40 years of arson and bombings and murder committed against the Cuban population. Cuba, the evidence showed, attempted to get the United States involved in stopping this cross-border warfare, this low-intensity warfare that's been going on for four decades. When the United States refused, Cuba then sought the time-honored right of self-help in bringing people to the United States to monitor the activities of that group so that Cuba could defend itself. We claim that that fits the defense of necessity because it was self-defense on the part of the Cuban government. And sending over a few people to monitor activities is a minimal response to the violence that was perpetrated against Cuba. And therefore, the jury should have been instructed that even if they find these defendants have technically violated any laws, those violations are excused on the defense of necessity. So that wraps up what the brief we filed today contains. And at the end, I'd be glad to answer any questions you have about the brief or the trial.
Before we get to that, thank you, Mr. Weinglass. We have Gloria LaRiva, who is the chairperson of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five, and she is going to speak next. Gloria?
Well, we wish to reiterate again, as we have in previous press conferences that the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five is linked up with dozens of organizations around the world, committees in over 125 committees that have been formed on every continent in solidarity with the five Cubans who are not only wrongfully imprisoned but have received punitive treatment, extra punishment from the government as high as the Attorney General, and therefore we coordinate our activities to try to ameliorate the situation for them. One example is when they were placed in solitary confinement recently for a month, and it was worse than solitary confinement. It was the special housing units that are virtual torture chambers. When they were suddenly taken from their regular activities at work and placed in the SHU units on February 28th and others on March 3rd, it was an order, a special administrative measure from John Ashcroft, and it was the efforts of the committees, including ours, and the hundreds and hundreds of letters and phone calls to John Ashcroft and the Bureau of Prisons that we believed helped release them, as well as the support of a number of Congress people who protested their treatment. We protest also the continued refusal of the Justice Department to allow two of the wives to visit their husbands. Olga Salazar is refused entry to the United States to visit Rene Gonzalez in South Carolina, and Adriana Perez is denied the right to visit her husband, Gerardo Hernandez.
It's also on the computer,
these
but I think we ought to find
the
hardship.
Serving lengthy prison terms,
because
and in the
they
case
might
of Gerardo, he has a double life sentence. And therefore, it's a particular act of cruelty to deny the family members the right to be close to their loved ones. And this is part of our campaign as well. We do not understand why the Attorney General will not let the wives and consequently one of the children, Yvette, who is the daughter of Olga and Rene Gonzalez, is 5 years old, and she has not seen her father in a number of years now because, although being a U.S. citizen, her mother is not allowed to enter the U.S.
Are you finished with your statement, Gloria?
Yes. We will continue our efforts, and if any... Betty would like to know how to contact us on our website. It is www.freethefive.org, and we are determined to continue this campaign until they are free. And I'm done.
Thank you. Now we're going to ask the press if they have any questions of either one of the two speakers.
Thank you.
If you could please identify yourself first and indicate to whom you're addressing your question.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, you will need to press the 1 on your touchtone phone. You will hear an acknowledgement that you have been placed in queue. If your question has been answered and wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign. Your questions will be queued in the order that they are received. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if there are any questions, please press the 1 on your touchtone phone. We have Bernie Dwyer online with the question. Please state your question.
Yes, Bernie Dwyer, Radio Havana, Cuba here. I would like to address my question to Leonard Weinglass, please. Mr. Weinglass, Anthony Guerrero was granted an extra month in which to prepare the appeal. Can you tell us the difference it made for him to have an extra month?
Well, the extra month was absolutely necessary because of the condition that the government put him in prison just as he was working with me on preparing his appeal. They suddenly removed him, and he was teaching, from his classroom, handcuffed him, and put him in a confinement cell, taking away all of his legal papers and denying him the right to call me to even communicate his status to me, or to receive any mail from me, or to write to me. So all the work that we were doing on his appeal came to a sudden halt. I wasn't even permitted to call him or to visit him. It was only after a lot of communication back and forth that they reluctantly agreed to let me see him. But that seeing him was hardly a visit, because they brought him to a very small booth in chains, bound hand and foot, and they put him in that booth and myself in the booth opposite him. There was a thick glass between us, and we can only communicate through a telephone. And it was hardly a visit. He didn't expect me. He was in a state of shock and somewhat stunned to see me because no one told him I was there. And we could even work face-to-face, even through a telephone, in that condition. So I protested this to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and I put it in a declaration under oath by counsel. When they received my protest, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals granted an extra 30 days. And ultimately, the government acknowledged it never had a basis for treating Mr. Guerrero this way, and they released him and removed all of his restrictions.
Mr. Weingrass, another question, please. Can you tell me now what exactly is in front of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals? I know that Eric Luna, on behalf of the Cuban Criminology Society, presented an amicus brief. So there are obviously several documents being presented. So could you tell us now how those are actually put together and how they're presented and treated?
Well, the court has before it five briefs filed by the five defendants. Each of us have filed separate briefs, which we are required to do. It also has before it the amicus briefs that were filed by the National Jury Project and the National Lawyers Guild and International Association of Democratic Lawyers in the trial court when a motion was made for a new trial on the basis of venue and prosecutorial misconduct. In addition, it has the brief that you acknowledged, which was filed by local counsel Eric Luna, professor of law at the University of Utah, on behalf of the association in Cuba, which sets forth the factual basis upon which the claim is made in my brief that the court erred by not charging the defense of necessity because of the 40-year history of violence perpetrated against Cuba. So the court has before it a very huge record, 117 volumes of transcript, hundreds of documents, five basic briefs, and I believe three or four amicus briefs, which will assist the court in resolving the case.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Weingart.
Yeah, right now. But I thought you might be trying to reach me. I wanted to get a hold of you.
And at this time, we have no further questions.
Perfect. I'll call you in a minute.
We have Andres Gomez online with a question. Please state your question.
Mr. Weinglass, this is Andres Gomez from Areito Magazine in Miami. Now that the court have the briefs, what is the procedure that the court follows and how long will it take?
The procedure is that the government will now be given a period of time to answer these five briefs and the amicus. It's difficult to predict how long that will take. I would estimate anywhere from 45 to 60 days. That will bring us into midsummer. The defense then is given an opportunity to reply to the answering briefs by the government. That will probably take an additional 20 to 30 days. That should bring us up into mid-August, and then the court, after receiving all of those briefs, we'll set down a date for oral argument. It's difficult to tell when the court will set the oral argument. Obviously, it will be sometime in the fall, either early, mid, or late fall. And then there will be argument had on all these matters before the court. That argument will be by the attorneys, and the defendants will not be present. At the conclusion of the argument, the court will then take the case under submission, and it will write its decision. When that will happen is also very difficult to predict. But if I had to give you any guideline on that, I would say the decision on the case will most likely come down sometime at the end of this year, but more likely in the early part of 2004.
Thank you very much, sir.
If Kathleen Densmore online with a question, please state your question.
Yes, my question is it relevant at all, their failure to register as foreign agents with the Attorney General? And if that is at all relevant, is it correct that historically some people haven't been fined anything for that at all or given any time in prison?
Yes, the answer is yes. That is a very unusual use of that statute. Most of the time, there are not prosecutions under that statute. But that was used in this particular case. And the defendants were sentenced to maximum terms under that statute. They have already served, by the time the case is argued, 5 years. It's my understanding that they would ordinarily, without the extra charges, be very close to being parole eligible this year, just for the charges of failure to register. However, our appeal defends against those charges on the grounds of necessity. That was the fourth argument that I mentioned today, that given the attempts on the part of Cuba to have the United States work as a partner in ending the violence, and the failure and the refusal of the United States to assist Cuba toward that end, Cuba then had the right to send over monitors to try to protect itself. And we feel that a jury, being properly instructed on the defense of necessity, which is really the defense of self-defense, the jury could have found, even if there was a technical violation of failing to register, that that violation ought to be excused, given the fact that it was the United States government that failed in its responsibility in curbing the violence, could not now be heard to accuse five people of undertaking that responsibility by monitoring the activities of the mercenary groups. So we feel that a jury properly instructed would have acquitted the five of those technical violations. But in any event, even if the jury didn't, they should be at or near their time for parole at this point. It was the two large conspiracy charges that have produced the life sentences, and that's what keeps them in.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, I have Mike Thornton online with a question. Please state your question.
Yes, Mike Thornton, KVMR FM Radio. I'm just trying to find out if Mr. Guerrero is being held in the ADX unit at the Florence, Colorado prison, and if anyone is monitoring his treatment and condition if he's being held in that unit.
He is not held in the ADX unit. He is held in maximum security, which is a different unit. He is no longer under what they referred to as national security restriction. He is free to be part of the general population of the prison. He has been restored as a teacher of mathematics and a teacher of English as a second language, positions he held before he was put into the punishment cells. So his life in prison has returned to near normal. That is near normal for a maximum security prison in the United States. I talk to him regularly, and I spoke to him on Friday of last week, and he seems to be doing okay at this point.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions?
We have Bernie Dwyer online with a follow-up question. Please state your question.
This is Okay. Question for Mr. Weinglass. Mr. Weinglass, you had a meeting with Amnesty International, and there was some reaction from them. In fact, they wrote a letter, if I'm correct. They wrote a letter to John Ashcroft, the U.S. Attorney General. Are you still in contact with them, and do you feel that they're going to be of help in the case?
Well, Amnesty has been of help right along, and they first wrote a letter concerning the matter that Gloria Lariva has referred to, the unjust denial of the right of two of the five to see their spouses and their children. And Amnesty correctly pointed out to the Attorney General of the United States that punishing someone by denying them access to their family is a form of torture under international standards, and the United States must cease that behavior. However, there has been no change, and theoretically it's still under review. Secondly, when the five were put into punishment cells and isolated under what's called national security restrictions, Amnesty International once again took a position on that issue. And it was their position, plus the position of some congresspeople, as well as organizations on human rights around the world, which I believe led to the government releasing them from national security restrictions. So Amnesty has intervened twice, and I think they are continuing their interest in this case as we provide Amnesty with the information that's contained in our appellate briefs. I'm sure Amnesty will be looking further into this situation, and I feel relatively confident they will join the arguments on the failure of the court to change venue so that the five could have a fair trial in a fair location.
Are there any other questions?
At this time, we have no further questions.
Well, then, the press conference is closed. I refer you again to the website, www.freethefive.org, and I thank you all for attending.
This concludes your teleconference. You may all now disconnect.
Thank you.
Hello, operator?
Yes.
Can you let Michael? Lynn? Okay. Since everybody's hung up, then I'll just...